Blog Talk Radio.
I see trees of green. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the skies, also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, say, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful. See trees of green. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the skies, also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, say, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Do you have confidence that a change in the law is going to change culture? Because I just don't see that.
Well, you just said it. You know, a lot of police departments have a mandate to intervene if one of the members of their force is doing something wrong, and it doesn't happen. That's not the law. Talk about in the episode to fund the police is completely reimagining what law enforcement is in this country, who gets to be law enforcement. communities. As you say in the episode, policing was built on the Barbados slave codes. It was built on slave catching. It is a system that is built on systemic racism. Sorry, Lindsey Graham, I know that makes you cry. It was built on systemic racism, and therefore it will never be an equitable system or a fair or just system for Black, Indigenous, and Latinx folks in the AAPI community. It will always be a system that is trying to protect rich white people from the rest of us. Does it worry you at all?
Yes.
Black and brown people in America, we need to go to the UN. we need to ask for protection from the UN. I'm calling for every lawyer, every community leader to come in. Now they're stopping independent truckers on the highway in different states. Pull them over. Say, I want to check your truck because somebody got kidnapped down the street. It's another form of rape. It's another form of racism to young black men. And 45 blacks been killed by police. Now white women been killed. They all been black and Hispanic people killed by the police across America. Looks like it's a vendetta to kill black men, black women, Hispanic men, Hispanic women. That's what's going on. And the judge won't let you see the tape. So it's going on. In the spirit of Dr. King and Malcolm, in the spirit of Marcus Garvey, we got to stand tall.
The destruction of being analyzed sharply challenged and profoundly changed. What we are seeing now is a freedom explosion. The realization of an idea whose time has come, to use Victor Hugo's phrase. The deep rumbling of discontent that we hear today is the thunder of disinherited masses rising from dungeons of oppression to the bright hills of freedom. In one majestic chorus, the rising masses are singing in the words of our freedom song, ain't gonna let nobody turn us around. All over the world like a fever, the freedom movement is spreading in the widest liberation in history. The great masses of people are determined to end the exploitation of their races and their lands. They are awake and moving toward their goal like a tidal wave. You can hear them rumbling in every village street, on the docks and the houses, among the students and the churches, and at political meetings. Historic movement was for several centuries that of the nations and societies of Western Europe out into the rest of the world in conquest of various sorts. That period, the era of colonialism, is at an end. East is meeting West. The earth is being redistributed. Yes, we are shifting our basic outlooks. These developments should not surprise any student of history. Oppressed people cannot remain oppressed forever. The yearning for freedom eventually manifests itself. The Bible tells a thrilling story of how Moses stood in Pharaoh's court centuries ago and cried, "Let my people go." This is a kind of opening chapter in a continuing story. The present struggle in the United States is a later chapter in the same unfolding story. Something within has reminded the Negro of his birthright of freedom. And something without has reminded him that it can be gained, consciously or unconsciously. He has been caught up by the zeitgeist with his black brothers of Africa and his brown and yellow brothers in Asia, South America, and the Caribbean. The United States Negro is moving with a sense of great urgency toward the promised land of racial justice. Fortunately, some significant strides have been made in the struggle to end the long night of racial injustice. We have seen the magnificent drama of independence unfold in Asia and Africa. Just 30 years ago, there were only three independent nations in the whole of Africa. But today, 35 African nations have risen from colonial bondage. In the United States, we have witnessed the gradual demise of the system of racial segregation. Supreme Court's decision of 1954, outlawing segregation in the public schools, gave a legal and constitutional death blow to the whole doctrine of separate but equal. Court decreed that separate facilities are inherently unequal, that to segregate a child on the basis of his race is to deny that child equal protection of the law. This decision came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of disinherited people. Then came that blowing day a few months ago, when a strong civil rights bill became the law of the land. This bill, which was first recommended and promoted by President Kennedy, was passed because of the overwhelming support and perseverance of millions of Americans, Negro and white. Came as a bright interlude in the long and sometimes turbulent struggle for civil rights. The beginning of a second Emancipation Proclamation, providing a comprehensive legal basis for equality of opportunity. Since passage of this bill, we have seen some encouraging and surprising signs of compliance. I'm happy to report that by and large, communities all over the southern part of the United States are obeying the civil rights law and showing remarkable good sense in the process. Another indication that progress is being made was found in the recent presidential election in the United States. The American people revealed great maturity by overwhelmingly rejecting a presidential candidate who had become identified with extremism, racism, and retrogression. The voters of our nation rendered a telling blow to the radical right. They defeated those elements in our society which seek to pit white against Negro and lead the nation down a dangerous fascist path. Now let me not leave you with a false impression. The problem is far from solved. We still have a long, long way to go before the dream of freedom is a reality for the Negro in the United States. To put it figuratively in biblical language, we have left the dusty soil to meet, across the Red Sea, whose waters have for years been harmed by long and piercing winter of massive resistance. Before we reach the majestic shores of the Promised Land, that is a frustrating and bewildering wilderness ahead. We must still face prodigious hilltops of opposition and gigantic mountains of resistance. But with patient and firm determination, we will press on until every valley of despair is exalted to new peaks of hope. Until every mounting of pride and irrationality is laid low by the leavening process of humility and compassion, until the rough places of injustice are transformed into a smooth plane of equality and opportunity, until the crooked places of prejudice are transformed by the straightening process of bright-eyed wisdom. What the main sections of the civil rights movement in the United States are saying, the demand for dignity, equality, jobs, and citizenship will not be abandoned or diluted or postponed. That means resistance and conflict. We shall not fret. We shall not be cowed. We are no longer afraid. The word that symbolizes the spirit, the Alpha Father of our is non-violent. It is not just that fight that has made it seem.
It's about that crazy thing that they couldn't possibly have produced, because the things that they claim are older than that.
Andy Perth was a new grandpa and was excited to see his granddaughter at the hospital for the very first time. Except when he got there, his vision was so poor, he couldn't even see his granddaughter's face. Heartbroken and angry, he desperately searched for a solution, and that's when he came across this award-winning research discovery and a simple ocean creature that was the key to unlocking his vision problem once and for all. After heavily researching a possible solution, he put together a remedy based on this prize-winning research, and he couldn't believe his results. After just 1 week, his dark, blurry spots started to vanish, and by week 7, he could see clearly again for the first time in years. Jan had glaucoma that was so bad, she was on the verge of going completely blind. She was at the end of her rope and was intrigued and skeptical by this new discovery. She tried the remedy, and to her surprise, her transformation was almost instant. Her vision started to clear within the first few days.
From Jamaica, Haiti, and other West Indian islands has restored the economy of Europe. South America, as you know, contributed very little to Europe then, contributed very little to Europe now. The region in between was in conflict with itself, not what the conversation is, because these folks want to be white. I wish they had a was white. That's that they are. That's another lecture, another day. But I have enough strong men to protect me from the podium to the street where the car is running. I was delivering a lecture on the role of the bad decision. The people created by the cunning scammer of black and white who go through life in most cases debating whether they're loyal to their mother's people or their father's people. Not knowing that every time they knock on their father's door, their father won't open the door, leaving them with no other door to come into but their mother's people's door. Yes, so many times they have no loyalty to their mother's house. In Africa, they had fought 100 years of colonial war. These Africans who never wore a snowball shoe, a heard of a military school, in their fight against global white supremacy, had outgunned some of the finest military minds of Europe. And whose word do we have for this? A young British reporter named Winston Churchill, in a book called The River Wall, dealing with the British retaking of the Sudan, and another called A Roving Commissioner, dealing with the Boer War in South Africa. These officers did not conceive that anyone had the right to take over their country. So the Asante Wars in what is now Ghana, the wars along the East Coast, the engineers brought into being by Islam, Europe, after chattel slavery was turned into another form of slavery called colonialism, a more sophisticated kind of slavery and more profitable. You're less responsible for the upkeep of the slave, and yet he has no choice but to work with you because you destroyed his way of life. He must now survive by serving you. You torn down his tree. You killed his farm life. You blasted his God. You told him smiling lady under the chandelier. The minute the officer went to London saw a chandelier and had a puck in his hand for two. A robe of white supremacy was manifesting itself in many ways because they had produced the mechanism of control. Now having control of body, they wanted to control the mental wealth of Africa. They knew then what you still do not know. Africa is and has always been the world's richest continent. All right. And we are a rich people who are poor because we have not understood our riches. That juvenile delinquent who came out of Europe shooting babies in the back, calling himself a superior man, at least knew something about the African who befriended him. He knew that he was politically naive. At the end of the 19th century, the Africans had 100 years of fighting this supremacy. The European had created a literature trying to justify his superiority. This literature had to deal with the brain side. It had measurement. A whole lot of things had happened. No scientific basement. Now, people looking for the missing link. The missing link cannot be possibly found in Great except in Europe. So they created it. A man in Europe took a skeleton, buried the skeleton, dug it up. History got created. In the meantime, there were Europeans debunking all of this. No one paid any attention to. Then, but in the closing years of the 19th century, there was a royal prostitute in Belgium named Leopold, who had houses of joy in different capitals of Europe, and he was spending a whole lot of money on these houses because he kept them the year round, and sometimes he used them about once or twice a year. He's looking around for capital. There are nations in Europe who did not get in on the slicing up of Africa. They would call a conference that was in while they would split up the rest of Africa with all those kinds of Muslims. The Germans got a big slice. The Germans got four nice pieces. Southwest Africa, now Namibia, the Cameroons, Togoland, now Togo, and Tanzania. They began almost to reverse the monotheism in Africa because the civilian governor of Southwest Africa was Jewish. The military governor was one of Gary Fox. No. If I didn't know what the doctor was saying, I mean, now, with these colonial walls being fought, African kings, so-called chiefs,
let's start with your name. Where are you from? Where were you when the fall happened?
You don't know this world.
He's a juvenile for exile, juvenile for suicide. What have we got now? The closing years of the 19th century, you got missionaries trained out of the, who are now petitioning the Europeans, going to his, appealing to his conscience, not knowing he had no conscience. You are no possibility of you. Not your heart. Listen to this. Not your heart. Meant for you. He gave that to you. He didn't intend to obey. Now, after the blood is come, and getting more colonial territory, German getting colonial territory, Belgium getting the big Congo, Portuguese getting a little bit. All of the gangsters agree on the site. No effort to attend it. And after Opera and American Stanford attended the conference, Spain has its rationale that the Congo might one day be a thing to sell America's flag. Saint Abraham Lincoln went through that same charade. Now you want to know what would have happened had Abraham Lincoln not been shot. I'm sorry, got shot. But had he not been shot, he had to fight to be a fool man to get all of us out of here. Even the corner of Brazil, anyway, let's get you out of here. And why he did not believe in slavery? Because it was an unfilled delay for this stuff. He didn't believe in your presence. At that point, right, he would never be supposed to be equal of a white person. In any case, so why you are welcome to celebrate things on your birthday, do a little story, thinking, and read the wrong minute. Famous article was Abraham Lincoln, a white racist. He asked the question, and he asked the question of women. Why?
All right.
Now, let's come down to the end of the 19th century. Africa is shifting gears. The warriors are leaving the field. The missionary trains and African activists are moving on the field. In Ghana, a brilliant politician, E.K. Kinkford, is in charge of the youth in exile, King Trempe, and his cousin. Yes, a statue wall says the master to shed the wall. And these walls, really walls, to maintain European control over Africa, therefore, of all the global white supremacy. At this juncture, we see North Africa coming under the French. We see the Arabs, the colonized, and the labor being colonized. We saw some resistance coming within this whole structure, and yet we see an intellectual movement existing in Africa in reaction to the continued presence of the Europeans. Along the coast of East Africa, Somalia, a man named Mohammed bin another Hassan, called the British, called the Mad Mullah, had fought the British up until about 1923. Along the coast of West Africa, the Asante Wars in Ghana had lasted from 1805 to 1900 when the exile Asante War. After the exile Asante War came to Aport, started a campaign for the return of the royal families. Completed that campaign into a fight for independence. And when he died in 1931, he sent for a young student, Joseph E. Dunqua, to send for J.P. And then J.P., the mantle is yours. Joseph E. Dunqua, in turn, had a young job one of these days, I'm going to tell them the real. No, but you have to tell them to say what they had to do to get along. And then you have another conversation. My main point is that Joseph did not want to transform his former students, that until the end of the day he addresses Francis K. Truman. He never thought twice, just like he was in the classroom. And it's Truman being brought home to take the mantle of leadership from Southwark, got impatient. And instead of waiting for the mantle to be handed to him traditionally, seized the mantle and left the country to independence. Had he waited for it 2 more years, he could have been done more peacefully. He could, there could have been a mixture of tradition and modernism. He would have been a much better state with the infusion of traditional government. Now, we became, we were now becoming a prize to be captured because the land resources of Africa becoming a prize to be captured. Africa was now relating Africa to the Caribbean and Africa to the United States. Great Caribbean figure Edmund Blyth had proclaimed and simply prophesied the concept of Black studies in his inaugural address, Liberia College, 1881. He had already written his crowning masterpiece, and doing the duty read right now, Christianity, Islam, and the Negro race. All of us are mixed up on all of us. We're mixed up on all forms of religion. We're mixed up on all forms of politics. The Europeans were still justifying the domination of other people through politics. All right. Now, we had at the end of the 19th century a better pan-African network, but it took 2 months for a letter to be delivered that we got right now. People were not boasting of any island they came from. The Africans understood the artificial nature of the state divided by foreigners. Some of them understood the artificial nature of the religion imposed on them by foreigners. All of this is a form of global white supremacy. All over the world, it began to happen. It has reached Asia. In China, the Europeans had their own court. In Shanghai, there was hotels. Chinese and dolls not allowed. Since other people would spit on you now, but not for them, it means better for us. All this is documented. Edgar Snow's work, another work called 400,000 customers. The only Chinese woman that can go into one of the hotels has to be a prostitute or a cleaning woman. This kind of humiliation, the British have reduced an entire nation to other people. You think you came to buy a tractor worse off than you ever were? If they survived, you can survive. But they ain't going to survive when you crack some heads. In the 1880s, an admiral named Perry kicked open the door of Japan to trade for the West, whether you like it or not. Look earlier than that. The Japanese were minding their own business. The silkworm making that beautiful kimono wouldn't shoot. Then he laughed.
We had produced the greatest line of intellect
outside of Africa. The climate was cold and humane. You could only work a slave 6 months a year. So you begin to have slave carpenters, slave craftsmen. You would farm them out. These are industrial slaves. They made a little money on the side. They could find their way out of this debt. It was quite difficult. They began to read, write, run newspapers. Reverend Douglas was getting into this group. Yet the concept of getting back to Africa was prevalent. 5,000 Africans in this country had fought with the British against American independence. And then they left out of history. After the British lost the war, they had to get rid of the British in Canada and Nova Scotia. Global white supremacy is now manifesting itself in the failure to acknowledge that every American citizen is a citizen. If you're a citizen, you need no civil rights movement and no civil rights action. They have not acknowledged you as a citizen. In a nation of immigrants, we are the immigrants against our will. We are the only immigrants who are invited here. The nature of the invitation will not be discussed. We were anxious to get us here. We had an affirmative action program waiting for us. No unemployed. No paid. We transform this nation. My main point is that the first half of the 19th century, we were fighting against global white supremacy in the back of Africa movement that started during the American Revolution. The movement to settle Liberia, 1847, was marching the natives in the Jamaican capital, going out to what is now Nigeria to search for a place. All of this was a reaction against global white supremacy. A lady in Nigeria who had been in the slave trade discovered that she was not a labor contractor, that people were not returning. She began to fight against the slave trade. She began to fight against other Africans in the slave trade. Her name was Madame Tannable. And when she continued her fighting, not only to get out of it herself, but to fight everybody in the trade, her husband had died. And there was a man pursuing her hand. And she told this man, I cannot marry you now because I have man's work to do and I do not have time to be a woman. She fought every king in the slave trade. And when she had removed the last king from his throne, she turned to the man pursuing her hand and said, I am a woman now, I'll accept your offer. You think you're not rich? Look what a beautiful offer that would be. What a beautiful offer. There's so many things that we get out of life that we have a complaint. It's a beautiful children's story, beautiful Adam story. Beautiful story of conversion, the story of Madame Tannable. I can name you a hundred of them now. I've been looking for research. Don't get me wrong, I'll research the latest for other people too. And born a country we never should have entered in the first place. Global white supremacy was manifesting itself and restrictions in the West Indies and restrictions in Africa and the continued partitioning of Africa and buying all the development. This country lasted right in 1906. Our reaction to Booker T. Washington's program of self-reliance, which was a form of nation building, a nation's management. Those terrible years between 1900 and 1915, the world, the Caribbean Islands, fashioned a constitutional government and improved their own laws because they were a majority, but they still did not remove the private club in every island, but they broke themselves down into clubs for brown people, clubs for almost white people, clubs for black people. We see a lot of things beyond the boundaries and other work on the subject. You can understand that we rest never for his work. Mirror, mirror. And another word, color. Reason, color, Caribbean. The British had built in an army. Some of the islands, especially in Barbados, I tell them that they were English. And they became as English as the English. By enough infusion of blood in Jamaica, they would hold their hands because they were fighting their relatives. And yet there was a group fighting for constitutional government, consistently fighting